Good afternoon. Welcome to the 2014 Integrated Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Heather Fletcher, Senior Editor of Target Marketing Magazine. I'm pleased to welcome you to the Data Horizon. Before we get started, let's go over some tech pointers. First of all, the most important one, if you have stuck slides or loss of sound, it may mean you need to refresh your browser. A couple shortcuts include pushing F5 on your PC or Command-R on your Mac. If you have any technical issues, please also let us know by pushing the Q&A button and let us know in the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions. Time permitting, we'll be addressing select questions later on, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the features on this console. Check out the Tips for Attendees widget if you'd like to learn more about this console. Also, Stephen has a lot of slides here. Not all of them will be covered in this presentation, so feel free to use the Download Slides widget and download the slides. Finally, if you would like to view this session again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show today. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months, beginning on Monday, August 11th. Watch your email for more details. So, like I said, Stephen has an awful lot of slides to get to, so I'm going to just let him, Stephen Yu, Target Marketing Blogger and President and Chief Consultant at Willow Data Strategy, get going with this 35-minute session. Hello, Stephen.
Thank you, Heather. Yes, like Heather mentioned, we have a lot of slides, but rest assured, I'll cover all the important parts, and the technical part will be at the end, so that's your takeaway. So what we'll cover today is about all this big data hoopla, and what is it all about, and how we make best out of it. Now, in this world, well, the title says this, it's the Internet of Things. That's the new buzzword these days. Yeah, but everything is connected, and everybody can collect any data. So in the world where even a refrigerator can order grocery items for the owner, so how is it any different? Well, in my case, well, my answer is this. You see, it's yes and no. It can help you sell more things. It may not. It depends on what you do. The data is everywhere, like in a matrix, and everybody collects the data incessantly. But the point is that are you really harnessing the power of the data and making money out of the data? So big data, small data, clean data, messy data, that is coincidentally my title of my blog at Target Marketing Magazine as well. And people mention this, the size of this data all the time. You go to any big data conference, they say, yeah, we collect collectively 2.5 quintillion bytes every day. And what does that even mean? That's like bragging about the size element. And, yes, well, a lot of modern data databases are designed to collect really fast and store them efficiently. And you can retrieve them really fast as well. But for decision makers, is that appropriate to even mention big data in that fashion? It's all about harnessing the insights and dropping the noise. It's not about bragging about the size. So what is the landscape of today's database marketing world? Let me just start with this. There are a lot of players who are really good at it now. In fact, if I mention some of the supermarket chains that I know, they brag about the fact that none of their two coupon books are exactly identical. That means they achieved 100% customization with their customer engagement. And then there are other same industry, same supermarket chain, different title, of course. But some guys have a lot of data, skill level data as well, but they don't really utilize it to customize anything. They just slap on their homepage HTML and send it out as an email and hope to God that people show up. The difference is huge. I'm not saying that everybody should be a database expert, but it's not any more possible to engage customers without understanding the data collected. And when you do so, it's not about just collecting the data in many different places, including your refrigerator. It's about understanding what's behind it, and that's why the analytics should be just at the center of this whole movement. So my thing is this. It's not about the size. I'm saying this in every chance that I have, that the big data must get smaller. And what does that even mean? It means that the size, the whole definition of the big data is all off here. I mean, you go to any conference, they always mention three Vs, volume, velocity, variety, which means that, yeah, if you have a lot of data and if you collect it really fast and if you collect it from many different sources, that's big data. Well, my answer to that is, well, so what? Maybe they should add one more V called value. Like, could you get any value out of it for your business? And another thing is this. Big data is so popular now that even the folks who never even touch the small data call it big data. So it sounds like the new definition of the big data is really, the way people use it, is that any data-based decision-making process is called big data now, which is not so bad for guys like me because, well, I don't have to explain what I do for a living for 20 minutes anymore. I just say, I am a big data guy, and people sort of understand what I do. But emphasizing the size element alone is missing the point. That's like saying, yeah, let's count all the grains of rice in California in front of a very hungry man, being the decision maker. And you know what the decision maker wants? And they just want a bowl of rice, bowl of cooked rice. In other words, I want answers out of this data, not some piles of data or mounds of data. It's like saying, you know what, I want a picture on a wall. And if somebody gives him like a whole bunch of paint and brush, well, that doesn't really make sense, does it? But that happens a lot in the data industry. They always throw in more data. Yeah, we have like 3,000 variables, and you can buy all those things from a vendor or data collector. Well, so what? The question that we're answering is, not, again, one is a yes and no question. If the yes and no is not possible, at least some probability score. As in, you know what, we have a golf outing as a company, and on Friday, what is the probability to have a rainy day on Friday? It would be 80%. They will make some decisions based on that number. Or it could be like 0% or 10%, and you'll go ahead and have the golf outing planned as discussed. So I want to change the whole definition of big data. In some ways, maybe the name is wrong. Maybe you should have called it a smart data or intelligent data or something to that extent, because it's not just about volume, velocity, and variety anymore. And if I may go one more step here, the big data movement should be about cutting down the noise. Yes, we have a lot of data, but okay, what does data mean? So let's cut down all the noise. And by the way, that requires some expertise and experience to do so, to cut down the noise with a conviction. And provide answers in a small format, because that's why I call it a small data. Because at the end of this whole process, and I will go through some of the steps today, you have a lot of data, you got to ask the right question, you got to cut it down, you use analytics to harness answers out of them, and you may have considered about a few thousand variables. But at the end of the whole process, it's just the questions. What's the question? Who's going to be a valuable customer for you? Who's more likely to fly a lot? Who's more likely to be on a cruise ship? All those things are questions. So bottom line, you got to humanize the data. You cannot just brag about the technical elements of the big data or any data, really. You got to really make it consumable to the decision makers. And also, it's another thing. I mean, it's a big hype, so at the risk of sounding like Yoda, big hypes are really not good. All hypes lead to overinvestment. All overinvestment lead to disappointments. And all disappointments lead to purging of all the related personnel. Never fails to happen. But in the past, there are a lot of organizations where they invested in CRM programs, tool sets or whatever, some obscene amount of money. It's kind of a money that to recover all this, you may have to double your revenue or double your response rate or triple it maybe. You will not achieve a goal like that anyway. So as a data professional, do I really welcome this hype? Answer is no. In fact, I have a lot of colleagues who are already thinking about the next phase. Like, we'll be doing this after this whole hype is done anyway. So what are we going to call ourselves? Data scientists or something else or not even data? But the point is, if you don't do this right, we only have about 2 to 3 year window until the big data becomes a dirty word again. So how do we avoid all this? My point is this. Let's have a goal. It's not about just collecting the data and build a really fancy database with the fancy sounding platform names. It's not about that. It's about what you want to do with it. You cannot just collect the data and pile it away and hope to God that some analyst will just one day find a good way to make more money with it. No, it doesn't have to happen that way. In fact, if I make an analogy to the movie-making process, yeah, the movie producers are not directors, they're not actors, they're not script writers, but they have a vision. Say, let's make a science fiction movie or a romantic movie or whatever, drama, just make a movie out of about something or based on a book or a script or whatever. Then the person hires all these professionals to make it right. So it's the same way. You got to have a vision. What are we going to do with this data? Let's have the business answer first, and then formulate answers out of the data using analytics, and the analytics should be supported by the database. It's not the other way around where you just collect the data first and hope to God that somebody figures it out. So let's talk about I want to give some advice to the users as well for decision makers. Like I said, you got to really set the goal first. You cannot just go into it just because everybody else does. And you got to take the data seriously. So one thing about the data is this. People have been doing the business or making decisions without the data for so long that they have some allergic reaction to some data-driven decision-making process as well. Or they put an equal value. It's like, you know what, all this data will be on the same weight as my gut feelings. Well, that's okay, too, because sometimes you have to believe in yourself to make the business happen. Yes, but you have to take data seriously. And you have to be logical. And let me make another analogy. When you're just Star Trek, or maybe you don't, but the point is, on the Starship Enterprise, there are a few things that are missing. First thing that I'm missing is the bathroom. I don't know where the bathroom is. They're also missing the seatbelt. Great. It would be nice if you have a seatbelt. But the most important thing is that, have you noticed that there's no systems programmer on the Starship where the Starship is run by the computers and there's no systems programmer? It is the world where the computer fixes itself almost. But if you notice, even that kind of a computer requires a logical questioning. Otherwise, it will not understand what you're talking about. Illogical queries will not provide any good answers. So even the business owners or the decision makers or the marketers who are not trained to be a professional mathematician or statisticians, they really have to think logically. How do you formulate? And that's the training that I'm talking about. How do you formulate your questions so that the computer can answer? And of course, related to this, you've got to be more specific about the goals. And don't get into this whole thing thinking that if I just get into big data, I'm going to just double my revenue. No, it's not about that. Make small objectives and then try a lot of projects as a proof of concept. And if you do a lot of those things, in the end, you will get a big success. It's like more like a compounding interest type of a mentality. And, of course, there's a new title out there, like data scientists. Everybody is calling themselves data scientists, not just an analyst or statisticians. And I have some advice for them, too, which is to be called a data scientist, you have to be a business person first. You've got to put the business goals first. Otherwise, you're just representing IT. And I read a column written by somebody else, and it was kind of harsh that the person was calling those folks who just touch the numbers and don't think about the business element, they call them data plumbers. You're moving data from here to there, and you're compiling data. You're doing things with the data. But you're not thinking straight about the business goals. In other words, you cannot be just technology-oriented, and it's not about who has the best shiny tools in what industry, and it's not about that. It has to answer questions so that you and your organization should make more money with it. And the third is that, yeah, don't be an evil scientist who just do things just because they can. And a lot of data projects happen that way, so I just wanted to add that there. So it's really about insights, not raw data. And let's talk about the three steps that I coined a few years back, because there was a lot of confusion about data products or data-related platforms and such. People are all fascinated by all the tool sets because, you know, that's through which you touch the data. Of course, you are fond of tool sets sometimes. But you got to really break it down, like what all these data procedures mean to you. And of course, there are more steps than this, but let's just break it down to three steps, which is, yes, you have to collect the data properly. Now, in the past, a lot of companies failed at that. Now, this is before the big data stage and all that. And yes, why the big data now? Because we're so much better at collecting the data and storing them. The collection is great. But like you see here, that is just the first step. It's not the end of the game. Just collecting and storing somewhere is not the end of the game. And then you got to refine it. And by the way, a lot of data players miss this step completely. just don't even think about refinement. Well, you know, I have a data, I can retrieve it anytime I want, so my job is done. The delivery got better too. But you can display data in any way possible. It could be a dashboard, it could be a report, you could get an email every morning, doesn't matter what it, or the report can come to you through your smartphone too. Delivery part is really great. And a lot of people think about the real-time delivery and real-time access, all those things, they're all related to delivery. But just because you have a fancy mechanism to deliver the data, you still have to go back to the refinement stage and think about what are we going to deliver? And that answer comes from refinement process, and the highlight of the refinement process is the analytics. So going to the next page. So you're going to build a roadmap. And the reason why I put a big roadmap here is because a lot of companies are totally backwards about it. So this is the backwards situation, that the decision makers and the marketers are dictated by the analyst. That, yeah, sure, this analyst gave me this report and that report or that kind of a model, so I'm just going to use that. Instead of ordering them, like, this is the kind of a goal that I want to achieve. These are the specific models I want you to build, all that. They don't. That conversation doesn't exist sometimes. But conversely, the analysts are confined by the limitations of the database design itself. In fact, most of the databases are not analytics ready. And in fact, that's the whole goal of this presentation, is how to make your database analytics and model ready. So guess what? All the analysts are fixing the data all the time. They're not really thinking about the goals or business goals or the methodology to achieve those goals. They're just going through the data mess that's created by all this data marts, databases, all these different sources of data all the time. And that is a completely backward situation. So how do you get out of it? Well, I'm suggesting the step-by-step approach. Let me just reiterate the fact that you got to formulate the questions first. And you may need some consultants to really translate your business goals into mathematical format or the questions that can be asked by the mathematics. Then you got to look through what kind of data do we have here. Oh, yeah, it's a big data, small data, all kinds of data. You can even buy data from all these vendors, but what are we dealing with? Then you got to transform such data so that you can use it in analytics, and we'll talk about that step. And then you got to really set analytical goals and write a spec and make sure that these are the best methodologies to achieve such goals. Then, going to the right-hand side of the chart, you got to apply that knowledge. Most of the failure happens after the models are built. So this is a really important step. Then you apply the knowledge and you run a campaign. And here's another thing. What you learn from all those things should go back to the data collection, meaning that all the interactions that just happened because of what you just did to your customers or prospects, that kind of a data should be collected again to your database. You got to really understand that kind of interaction and make your program better. So at the end of this whole cycle, your business goals are realized. And that's the major steps that I just illustrated there. And also I want to emphasize the fact that there's no such thing as one size fits all, and there's no tool set you can just buy and forget about it. Oh, by the way, all the folks who sell the tool sets will say this. It's like, if you buy this tool set, all of your dreams will come true. No, that's not really true, because the business questions that are asked by all these different industry verticals are completely different. The way they measure success is different. The way they collect the data is different. Let me give you a small example. If you are selling a widget through online channel, you will not ship that widget before somebody pays for it. But let's just say that there's a business where it could be a continued program or subscription or utility, where the first goal is to collect as many customers as possible, and then the next goal is to elongate the relationship as long as possible. If they want to quit your service, then you want to hold them back. And while doing so, you've got to understand the value of that customer. You may think there's a small difference, but that changes the dynamic of the analytics and database design completely. I mean, totally different from the folks who just collect money and ship merchandise. So you really have to understand the industry sensitivity, and the analyst and the database designers who design the database for you should really take that into account. So here's what the answer is. On the left-hand side, you will see all this what we call raw data. Yeah, you get a demographic data, thermographic data, RFM data. The transaction data is often called as RFM data, recency frequency monitoring. And related to that, you have a product and service-related data. Promotion and response history, very important. Lifestyle data, delinquent history, all those data. But those are just piles of data. But the question that I'm talking about, and I talked about big data must get smaller. Small answers look like this. Who is more likely to buy a luxury car? Who's likely to take a foreign vacation? Going down the list, who's likely to upgrade, who's likely to leave or come back? Who's difficult? Who's more qualified for credit? All those things are the kind of questions that the decision makers want to know or the marketers want to know. It's not about, how much is this income factor for that household? It's not about that. Just because you have a high income, does it guarantee that the guy will be buying a luxury car? In fact, the person who is really shopping for a luxury car, do you really believe that the income is the differentiating factor between a Mercedes buyer and a Lexus buyer? Absolutely not. So you got to really combine all this information on the left-hand side together and formulate the answers on the right-hand in the form of the answers that look like the answers on the right-hand side. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard for any decision makers to make decisions with the data. And by the way, I used to sell demographic data as well and found out that, you deliver about a few hundred variables to any kind of a company. And later on, ask them, what did you use? And they say, I use the income, I use age, maybe presence of children or age of the children, such things. That's like I just bought a box of crayon that has 64 colors and find out that my kid only uses like 3 colors of it. Well, then why did I just buy that big box of crayon? I could have just gone to a family restaurant and they give you free crayon, just grab it and come home and I'm done with it. The point is, even in the age of small data, that used to happen. So can you imagine when you have a few thousand variables in any database and you have millions and millions of lines of entries in your database? A normal decision maker who's not trained to be a data specialist or analyst will not be able to cut through it. And hence, that's why you need analytics. But there's so much different opinions about the word analytics. Let me just touch upon that really quickly. When people say analytics, especially the big data people, it's about the present time. The first bullet point is business intelligence or BI reporting, they call it. It's about dashboarding. You drive a car, you want to know how fast you're going, how much fuel you have left. You want to know these vital senses. You're not an engineer, but you want to know these things. But that's about the present, though. A lot of folks think that that's the end of the analytics, but that's definitely not. The second category is what we call descriptive analytics. It's about how to describe your target. It's like, who are they? Where do they live? Are they like single mothers with a white-collar job with kids? Or what kind of income range are they in? Or what kind of house do they live in? That type of thing. They call it descriptive analytics. So that when you have all this profile and segmentation done, you can even talk to them or write a copy as if you are talking to a real person. The third category is predictive modeling, and that's what I'm talking about. In other words, what will happen in the future? Who's likely to do what? Who's likely to respond? Who's likely to go on a cruise vacation or be a NASCAR fan or whatever it is? Who's more likely to be a valuable customer for you in the long run? That type of thing, predictive modeling. That is the highlight of a lot of analytics, and people call that sometimes just analytics. Optimization is a little different. These are done by marketing agencies, and it's about your budget or what-if analysis. In other words, you have $1 million to spend, and how should you spend money? Should you increase the budget for TV or radio versus all the other channels, and will that make any difference in the end? All this what-if analysis or channel optimization, those things are optimization models. But what's interesting is that if you go to those any agencies, they call that analytics. For the sake of this presentation, let's just stick to predictive modeling because there are so many benefits of predictive modeling in the age of the big data. So let's ask, why model? Well, in the old days, the reason why the modeling became popular is because it really predicts who's going to respond before you even drop a single mailing. So if you know who's going to respond before you drop mailing, you can save a lot of money, and that's how it was popularized. But you may ask, like, you know what, the delivery cost is so much lower now, so why should I worry about all these delivery charges because the email is free? But you know what, you still have to be relevant because this number one reason why people opt out of any email program is because I keep getting all these emails that's totally not relevant to me. It's about the customers, really. But in the age of big data, the most important reason is at the bottom. Models summarize complex data into simple-to-use scores, meaning that your score to predict some behavior, like likely to do something, it may reflect like 1,000 variables in there, but it's a one small answer. If you can have a lot of answers, you can describe a person in many different ways. Instead of looking at thousands of variables, you could have hundreds of affinity variables, if you will, affinity scores, if you will. So it's all wonderful, but there are a lot of folks who still don't believe in the statistical modeling technologies. And there are a lot of excuses. Oh, my university is so small that I'm going to just talk to everybody. Well, my answer to that is that, well, you cannot say the same thing to everybody. Models can differentiate what you can offer to all these different prospects or leads. Well, predictable data not available, well, that used to be a good excuse in the 70s and 80s, but not anymore. Yes, I understand that the big data is so messed up now, so it takes some work to make it predictable, but it doesn't mean that you don't have the data. You just have a lot of messy data. Well, the one-to-one marketing channel is not in the plan. That's not a good excuse either because, it's already happening right now that every screen that you see, it could be a TV screen, mobile screen, it could be a computer screen, any screen, it could be a billboard. That can be used as a one-to-one channel. So every channel can be personalized. To really make every channel personalized, you really need models and analytics. Bottom line is this. Database marketing is really a simple concept. One is that you got to decide whether you should talk to somebody or not. Number two, if you decide that you want to talk to somebody, what are you going to say? Are you going to send the same HTML email because you can? Let's say you're selling laser printers. Somebody could be buying a laser printer because you are into printing a lot of photos of your family. He's a family guy. Or he could be buying the laser printer because he has a home office. If you know that, or not know that, but you have some probability score to guess that kind of information, why would you say or send the same kind of email to everybody? Now, let's talk about the stage of a marketing cycle because let's not talk about models, actually. I'm just looking at this as a marketer. If you're a marketer, what do you want to do? You want to acquire a new customer. If you acquire the customer, you want to develop the relationship and retain that relationship for as long as possible. And for some reason, if the person leaves your service, then you want to win him back. At every stage, you can really build a model to describe all these different behaviors. And what's nice is about this, about modeling is this. Once you have a really small answer for everybody, let's just make an example of what we call valuable vulnerable. Somebody's ready to walk away from your service, or he calls you and complains a lot. But you happen to have some value score for the person. You will know immediately, should I hang up the phone as soon as possible, or I will never let him hang up on me because I want to retain him as long as possible. You will know all these things with the various model scores. So it's a really powerful statement here that when you build models, your action can be better with your customers. Sometimes I get this question, like, what is a model then? Model is nothing but a mathematical expression of differences between two dichotomous groups, meaning that totally two different, not overlapping groups, such as buyers or non-buyers, responders and non-responders, loyal customers and people who are about to leave, all those kind of differences. If you know that, then the difference is a score. So this is how we can predict who's more likely to respond, for example. I'm not going to talk about the mathematics behind it because this is not a math class after all, and a lot of people really don't like math anyway. But what I'm trying to do is this. For the marketers, at least you got to know what makes up a model. What is the important decision-making process for the marketers before you order a model? And then let's just summarize in terms of three things called TCNM, target, comparison universe, and methodology. If you want to know who's going to respond, you got to know who are the non-responders. Sometimes the marketers fail to collect such non-responders. That's how you cannot build a model sometimes. That's why even as a non-mathematical person, you've got to understand how the mechanics work. You need to define a target, and that's where we need input from all these marketers as well. Designers cannot know what you really want to do with this whole thing. So defining the target is not just an analyst job. But sometimes it happens backward. I go into the meeting and the marketers go like, you know what, I need a neural net model right now. Well, that's methodology. My answer to this is, why methodology? Did you just come back from some conference? No, it's not the methodology that makes difference. Methodologies, yeah, sometimes it makes difference here and there, and the difference can be measured in fractions. If you define a wrong target, the whole thing can melt down. So the difference is huge. So I want to raise awareness about this whole importance of targeting, because that is something that a marketer can control. But defining a target is not that easy, because sometimes a target is very elusive. For example, I meet a lot of clients who sell really high-end bedding product or high-end car accessories or whatnot. They're always going after really high-value customers. What if somebody shows up very often, but she doesn't make any big purchases, but she makes a lot of them? Conversely, the big whale type of person who spends like purchase $1,000 item all the time, but she does not show up that often. If you treat them the same way, then you are shooting for the phantom target with the average of those two kind of people, and it will never work. And sometimes the whole process of a sales process will require a funnel approach. It's like there's a big universe, somebody becomes a lead, you've got to qualify the lead, and you've got to call in the order of importance, and then you close the deal. Sometimes online marketing is like that. You blast an email. Well, for that, you got to qualify who will be receiving those emails. And they click through, they browse, and they put something in a shopping basket, and they convert. And they do it again. And all these steps sometimes should be looked at differently, and that requires multiple targets. Sometimes things are inversely related. People who, say, for example, you want to do the credit card mailing. People who are more likely to respond to credit card offers, a lot of times they have bad credit, and you don't want them. So that means you have two really conflicting targets there, and sometimes you have to look at it in a two-dimensional way. Now, I cannot really talk about all possible scenarios here, but what I'm trying to do is that this is a case where the marketer's input is critical, because we do not, data scientists or the analysts, they do not understand fully in terms of what you're dealing with. And this is a very, very important aspect of modeling. But it is very painful to build models sometimes, because models are fixing data all the time. Then why does that happen? It happens because most databases are designed for something else, like order fulfillment, contact management, all the other things, but it's not ready for predictive modeling. Because the predictive modeling is really not about just compiling the data. Let me just skip through all this. We're running out of time here. Predictive modeling is about ranking. And your decision-making is really all about ranking. It's like, who's more important, who's more valuable? You've got to understand that. But most of the databases are transaction-based. It's describing the transactions. It's not describing the targets, like household individuals and emails and companies. So what you have to do here is that you got to really optimize the whole thing in terms of the target. If you have the target data on a household level, you got to summarize the data on a household level. So everything that you have should be describing such households. If your target is about email or individuals, then everything they have should be describing those things. The description comes from all the categorical variables and metadata tables and all the summary variables like averages and last time you did something or average dollars in such and such categories. But it should be the buyer-centric portrait. And I think this is the most important thing that I want to leave behind today, is that if you want to really target individuals, you got to convert the data sets as a descriptor of all the different individuals. It's called a buyer-centric portrait. So this is the last page I'm going to cover today. a lot of folks are afraid of the fact that, well, does it mean that I have to overhaul the whole database and create a new one just because somebody is trying to analyze something? I'm not saying that at all. But when somebody says modeling, so a lot of people just talk about the right-hand side, the dark blue section of the chart here. You sample, you model, you apply the model, you think that that's the whole process. Well, it's not. Because a model is only as effective as what goes in there. And to do that, you got to clean the data. You got to categorize all the unstructured data. You got to consolidate all the different transactions and different sources into one individual or one household or any level you are trying to target. You got to summarize the information so that all the descriptive, in other words, the transaction data should be converted into descriptors of the buyers. So if it's too complex, I want you to remember that this is not something that an analyst does. This is something that you got to build in parallel with the analytics team or outsourcing vendor or whoever does this thing. This is the step you need. And this is the key to make more sense out of the big data that's just piled on. Even temporarily, you got to convert all this information that's scattered all over the place into the descriptors of your target. So
okay.
Now we are running out of time, so I will take the question
completely.
At this point.
Yeah, we're actually completely out of time, so I'm going to make an actually very, very short outro here. Everyone, Stephen's going to stay. That was very nice of you, and I'm glad you're doing that. Stephen's going to stay in the networking lounge if you have questions for him, and I can see you already do. So thank you, Stephen. And on behalf of Target Marketing and Printing Impressions magazines, thank you for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything, go into the networking lounge. Please visit the info booth and fill out our show survey. And if you missed anything, please visit the show archive. Have a great evening, everyone.
Thank you so much.